Good morning. I invite you to be opening your Bibles this morning. Book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 7. Proverbs 7 is where we're going to be this morning. We're going to be reading from there in just a moment. You're going to have your Bible opened up or booted up there. You ready to follow along? Good to see you this morning. Glad that you are here. Visitors are among us, and we are especially appreciative and encouraged by your worshiping God together with us. It's good to know that there are people who we may not know well personally, but you're interested in God's things and therefore your kindred spirits with us. We're glad that you're here. If you are curious about what's going on here, want to know more, we'd love to talk with you, study with you about that. I hope that you'll share your questions or concerns with us. We'd love to open God's Word with you and together seek His will. We're glad that you are here this morning. Book of Proverbs, chapter 7. I tell you, when it comes to sexual immorality, which is an extraordinarily pervasive sin in our time, in our place. Ever since the 60s, in the sexual revolution, as we typically call it in this country, in which it became publicly permissible, even encouraged and eventually celebrated, to separate sexual relations from the marriage bed, that has become something that's just common and even expected among people in our time and in our place. Especially, I think, as Christians, we tend to think that because only quote-unquote sinful people do this, and since I, by definition, am a good person, I'm not vulnerable to this problem. It's something that, therefore, we all the more ought to look closely, because the Bible makes very clear that those who think that it can't happen to them are often the ones who are most at risk for it actually to happen to them. And so we need to understand this morning, we need to talk, and especially for the sake of our young people, who are growing up in a world in which sexual immorality, as the Bible calls it, is something that is considered normal and even healthy and to be expected, particularly among the young, but among all of us, really. We need to listen very carefully to the Bible's clear teaching on this subject and remind ourselves from time to time what God has said about this aspect of human nature and human relating. And so that's what we're going to do in the few minutes we have together this morning. And somebody says, by the way, Jeff, listen, you know, sexual immorality, it's been a problem always throughout all times and all places. I mean, haven't even read in the Bible some of those stories in the Old Testament where all sorts of debauchery goes on. And that's true. But I will tell you, it's rarely been, especially since Christianity and the Roman Empire and since things became especially in the past several hundred years in the Western civilization, became more overtly, and I use this term accommodatively, Christian in the culture. It's only been relatively recently that we've gotten back to a point where our culture actively celebrates it. Yes, people have always done it. But there's a difference in doing it behind closed doors, but everybody kind of admitting we really shouldn't, and publicly celebrating and endorsing it. There's a world of difference in that, regardless of the fact that it's always gone on privately. Have your Bible, so in Proverbs chapter 7, I want you to read what the wise man says. And especially young people, listen up. A father writes to his son, to a young person, "My son, keep my words, treasure my commandments within you, keep my commandments and live, and keep my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind my teachings on your fingers, write my teachings on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your intimate friend, that these things may keep you from an adulteress, from the foreigner who flatters with her words. For at the window of my house, I looked out through my lattice." These days we say, I just turned on the television and I saw. "I saw among the naive and I discerned among the youths, among the young people. I saw a young man lacking sense, passing through the street near her corner." Who's her? Oh, there's always that person everybody knows who her is. Her house. "He takes the way to her street in the twilight, in the evening, in the middle of the night and in the darkness. And behold, a woman comes to meet him. She's dressed like a harlot and cunning of heart." Everybody knows who she is. Everybody knows what she's about. "She's boisterous and rebellious. Her feet do not remain at home. She is now in the streets, now in the squares. She lurks by every corner. And so she seizes him," this young, naive, young person. "She seizes him, she kisses him, and with a brazen face, she says to him, I was due to offer peace offerings. Today I've paid my vows. Therefore, I've come out to meet you. See what she does, how she mixes. It's okay. I'm a religious person too. It's okay. What I'm going to suggest we do. Therefore, I've come out to meet you, to seek your presence earnestly. And behold, I found you. I have spread my couch with coverings, with colored linens of Egypt. I have sprinkled my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us drink our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with caresses. For my husband is not home. He's gone a long journey. In other words, we will not get caught. He's taken a bag full of money, and at the full moon he will come home. I know when he's going to be back. I can tell by how much money he took. There's no ATMs in the ancient world. The more money you took, the longer you're going to be gone. He won't be back for a month. We got plenty of time. He'll never know. We will not get caught doing this. And with her many persuasions, she entices him. With her flattering lips, she seduces him. Suddenly, he follows her. And as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as one in fetters to the discipline of a fool, until an arrow pierces through his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare, so he does not know that it will cost him his life. And a subtle image seems to be there that, as is so often the case with the young and the dumb, we won't get caught. Turns out exactly the opposite. And the husband apparently suddenly comes home early, does not take kindly to some young fool lying with his wife, and kills him. The arrow in the liver. And he does not know it will cost him his life. Now, therefore, my sons, listen to me. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For many are the victims she has cast down. See, in one sense, it's not about any one particular woman. The woman in this little parable is every woman. It is every person who entices somebody who should know better to the sin of fornication or adultery. This woman has many victims, many fools who have gone down streets they should not have gone down, who have listened to persuasions they should not have been listening to and taking in and thinking about and even starting to wonder, maybe we really will get away with it. Her house is the way to Sheol, descending to the chambers of death. Verses 1 through 5, 24 through 27, you get the sense of the passion of the parent. Please, children, listen to me. I know what I'm talking about. I've been young and I've been there. And I've lived long that I've looked around. I've known people. I've seen enough TV and its lies. I've seen enough movies and their lies. I've seen this story before, and I don't want it to become your story. Will you please, young people, will you please listen to me? In verse 6 in the parable itself, I want you to notice, this wasn't a bad kid. He was naive. He wasn't a bad kid. It wasn't, it was that kid. Everybody knows about that kid. That's not who this was. There will always be people who you're not surprised when they do certain things. This was not that kid. He was naive. In other words, he was not maybe listening as closely to mom and dad as he should have been. He was not listening to the advice of the older and the wiser and those who are well-conditioned in righteousness to show them the safe path of God's ways. He was naive. He was somebody who sleeps through sermons. He was somebody who doesn't pay attention in Bible class. He was somebody who isn't paying attention when mom and dad try to talk with them in the car or at home at the dinner table. He's the young person who says, I've got this. I can handle this. I know what I'm doing, Dad. I know what I'm doing, Mom. I can handle it. He was naive. He was a kid who lacked life experience. He was a kid who lacked judgment and didn't listen to those who have it. And I want you to notice as well, young people, notice this part of the story. He does not intend when he leaves home that day, he does not intend to wind up where he does. He doesn't go out and say, hey, I'm going to commit sexual immorality. Let me go find a willing partner. That's not how this story starts. He goes out, and he's not directly headed to her house. He's just passing through the neighborhood. Don't say he was looking for her. Now, she was looking for him. The world is always looking for the young, the dumb, the gullible, the fools. The world is always looking for those who think they know better than their parents, for those who think they can handle it, even though those who are older and wiser say, trust me, you're playing with fire here. He wasn't going to her house. He was just passing through the neighborhood. He wasn't looking for trouble, but he was in the area where trouble can happen. Listen, young people, there are sometimes your parents are going to tell you that there are people they don't want you associating with. Listen, young people, there are going to be times when parents are going to tell you, I don't think you should be dating that person. Because parents have been there and done it. They were young once. Because parents have life experience. Because parents have seen this story happen before. There are going to be times when they tell you, listen, you shouldn't be in that place. You shouldn't be at that party. You shouldn't be at that neighborhood. You shouldn't be with that person. I've seen this before. And I know what it looks like. But here's a naive young man. He walks down the street in the neighborhood he probably shouldn't have been in. He's not looking for trouble, but he's in a place where trouble happens. You know where the prostitutes are. Even if you don't intend to be participating in that, why would you be there? But he goes there. And again, she talks a good game. It's her hitting upon him. And the text makes very, very clear. Go back to verse 21. With her many persuasions, she entices him. She wears him down. He's already in the place where these things happen. If he were a wise young man listening to his parents, he wouldn't have been on that street. And when she began talking, he wouldn't have started listening. But he did. And it takes her time, but eventually, because he hangs with those kind of people, because he listens to those kind of thoughts, because he begins to buy in to that type of a worldview, that type of a definition of what's right and what's wrong, what's sexual or what's acceptable and what's not, what's permissible and what's not, what's healthy and what's not, according to what the world says, according to what she says, she wears him down. Which is why his first response to her should have been, no. And who knows, maybe it even was. Maybe the first time she hits him, maybe the first time she suggests, maybe the first time it's no, I don't do that. My parents have told me better than that. But the problem is he doesn't run. He doesn't leave. He stays and he keeps listening. If she could keep persuading, it's only because he's still there listening. And so young people, you need to understand, it's great when the first time you have an opportunity to do wrong with sexual immorality, it's great that you say no, but if you stay in the place where the opportunity arose, if you stay there, or if you keep listening to the people who say it's okay, if you stay there and you keep listening, the first response may be the right one, but odds are eventually the last response will not be. And so with many persuasions, she wears him down. That's why she has to keep talking about how good it is. That's why she has to eventually go to the argument of we won't get caught. I know my husband's gone. I know my parents won't be back for 4 hours. I know no one's going to be home tonight for a while. I know my roommates won't be back to my apartment. I know we can get away with this. There's an interesting word in verse 22. It's the word suddenly. Suddenly he follows her. The word's a little bit ironic, actually, because when you look at what comes right before in verse 21, she has to persuade him over and over and over. She has to keep on making the point, listen, it's going to be good. It's going to be great. We're not going to get caught. Nobody's ever going to know. We're going to get away with it, and it's going to be spectacular and wonderful and fun. And besides, everybody does it. You know that. I know that. The suddenly is perhaps maybe how he feels when he realizes what he's doing or what he's done. But there was no suddenly about how he actually got there. He was in a place where he never should have been because these kinds of things happen in those kind of places, and he was there. He keeps listening while she keeps talking. And so the suddenly may be how he feels when he realizes what he's doing or what he's done, but the suddenly is not how it happens. And so the father just comes back to his son and says, son, do not stray into her paths. Let me make three quick observations about sexual immorality and how we fall into it and how to avoid it. And young people, I need you to listen to me very carefully and very closely because yours is one of the most crooked generations the world has ever known. The world that you have inherited, you've never known a world. You've never known a culture or a society. You've never known a world that even begins to put any limits on what human sexual behavior can or should be. You need to listen. You need to listen very well. Three quick points and we'll be done. Number one, I need you to understand this morning. Number one, I need you to understand that sexual immorality, when it happens, sexual immorality happens, number one, because we are often arrogant or oblivious. You hear that, young people? especially young people. It happens because you're arrogant or because you're oblivious. So often, and this is true of many sins, by the way, but especially of sexual immorality, where people who know better wind up there and wonder, how did this happen to me? How did I get to this place? How did it get to this point where she's pregnant? Or how did it get to the point where I'm pregnant? How did it get to the point where I have lost my virginity and now I will have to explain someday to some potential marriage partner how that happened and why that happened? When it comes to moral failure, it often starts with ignorance or overconfidence. It starts with arrogance and obliviousness. Young people, you always sit there. I know because I was young once. We sit there and we say, you know what? Maybe others can't handle it, but I can. Maybe the guy in Proverbs 7, maybe he couldn't handle going down that street, but you know what? I can handle going down that street and nothing's going to happen to me. I can always say no, and I will always have the willpower to walk away. I can handle it. I'm so different. I'm so much better. I'm so much stronger. I'm so much wiser, more spiritual and knowledgeable, and I'm strong enough. I can take it. Only the fool thinks that way. When you're in the place where these things happen and you stay there and you listen thinking, you know what, I'll just hear her out, but I'm not going to do it. I really wouldn't do it, and I can walk away at any time. That's when suddenly happens to you too. We underestimate the power of temptation. And the reason we underestimate the power of temptation, whether it's sexual or otherwise, but especially when we're focused on the sexual power, sexual temptation, the reason that we underestimate it arrogantly and ignorantly is because we don't realize that temptation is not so much about what happens outside me. Temptation is what happens inside me. And because of that, usually when we begin to think I can handle it, it's because we don't really know ourselves well enough to know that I can never really handle sin and the temptation if I stay too long at its threshold. See, here's what James said in James chapter 1. You need to listen to these words. You need to get this in your mind. And this needs to become words to live by. James chapter 1, beginning in verse 13, James says this. He says, let no one say when he is tempted, I'm being tempted by God. Because God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But, James says, each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust, his own desires. Where does temptation come from? It does not come from outside me. It comes from inside me. It comes from my disordered desires. It comes from my undisciplined heart. It comes from my corrupted, wicked will. That's where temptation comes from. And if I think I can handle it, it means I don't yet know myself well enough to realize the problem is not I can handle what other people say to me. The problem is that I should not trust my own heart and my own ability to control what Jeremiah says in Jeremiah 7 is a desperately wicked thing. Our desire is what makes temptation effective. We can't blame circumstances as such. I blame myself for the disordered desires that come with me. The fall comes from within. When you go fishing, and I'm no expert on this, but when you go fishing, you get the fish you want. If you're in a place out in the Gulf or in a larger lake where there's multiple kinds of fish, you get the kind of fish you want based upon the lure you select, right? Different fish go for different baits, different kinds of lures, different kinds of depths, different times of day. You catch the fish you want by choosing the right lure. But let's understand when it comes to fishing, in a sense, it's not the lure that gets the fish. It's the fish's desire for the lure that gets the fish. The fish sees whatever it is that you put down, and that's why we bait according to what we want to catch. Because we know that certain types of fish, when they see certain types of lures, their desire for that lure is what's going to get them on the hook. The hook's not magic. The hook's not a magnet. You just don't throw the hook in the water, and fish just jump onto it. Believe me, I've tried. It's not how it works. The fish wants what you have, and if you want to catch bass, you bait accordingly. You want to catch catfish, you throw anything in there, they'll eat anything. But the point is, it's what the fish wants that gets the fish on the hook. We may be bigger and better than fish, but we're no different than fish in this regard. We underestimate temptation because we underestimate how far our will may still be from God's will, how disordered our own desires may be. We are not good at examining ourselves. And so how tragic are the words, whether they're in the mind or whether they're spoken out outright? I can handle this. I can handle it. And so, young people, we disregard a friend who means us well and tells us we probably shouldn't be with that person or be going in that place or spending that much time alone together. We disregard what our parents say. We disregard what the preacher says. We disregard what the Bible class teacher says. We disregard what the elder says, publicly or privately, because you know what? They don't know me. I can handle it. The fool does not recognize the problem, does not understand the power of temptation because they don't understand their own heart. And the overconfident doesn't think it's an important problem. And that's when we are open to all sorts of sins, but especially the sexual immorality. Number two. Even more specifically, when sexual immorality happens, it happens because we underestimate the power of sexual desire in particular. God made us. God made us as sexual beings. It was part of what it meant when He made when God, back in the beginning, Genesis 1, Genesis 2, when God decided to make man in His image, male and female, He made them. It's part of who we are and how we were made. It's not something that's dirty. It's not something that's even shameful, though the world has certainly turned into something that's disgusting and shameful. But in and of itself, it is right, it is good, it is true, it is beautiful. It is part of who we are in the image of God. That just as God relates among Himself as a Trinity, we relate among ourselves as a duality. The male and the female come together as one flesh. God made us this way. And God is clear from the very beginning that He made it for marriage. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And what Jesus made very clear in Matthew 19, what God has joined together, let no one separate. This is what it's for. This is what it does. This is how you use it. But when it's done this way, God's purpose, God's vision, it is right, it is true, it is good, it is beautiful, but it is powerful. Because it is meant to be the epoxy that binds two people together for life. You know what happens when you epoxy something? When do you use epoxy instead of Elmer's? You use epoxy when you want to put something together that you don't want to ever take apart again. That's when you use epoxy. You use Elmer's, you know, a little water, a little finesse, and you can get that back apart. But when you epoxy something, you better be really good and sure that you want your fingers stuck together for life. Because once you epoxy something, the only way to get it back apart, epoxy is so powerful, epoxy is so strong. Once you epoxy something together, the only way to get it back apart is to break it. You will destroy whatever you've epoxied if you ever try to pull it back apart again. That's what sex and marriage is supposed to be. That's what God intended it to be. It's a legitimate desire, but it's a powerful desire. And like anything in life, rightly used for its purpose, it's powerful to its purposes, but wrongly used, it is equally powerful to destructive ends. We underestimate the power of sexual desire too often, especially when we're in vicinities, when we're in quarters, when we're around people and around places where it is liable, likely, and even encouraged to be abused. It's interesting that in the Bible, when you read the Bible, as much as the Bible often tells us to resist temptation and endure and stay strong and steadfast, when it comes to sexual immorality, the Bible just says flee. There's lots of the situations in the Bible just says, you know, stand strong, stand firm, hang in there. But when it comes to sexual immorality, what the Bible consistently says is flee, get away. This is a desire that's so close to how God made us, male and female in His image. This is so close to who and what we are. This is so strong and so powerful in its right purpose that its potential for misuse is equally strong. And so when it comes to this thing, you flee. You flee sexual immorality. That's what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 18. It's a simple imperative. Flee immorality, he says. Every other sin a man commits is outside the body, but the immoral man sins against his own body. Paul tells Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22, now flee youthful lusts. And of course, if you want to see this principle embodied, the exact opposite of the young and naive youth of Proverbs chapter 7, there's a story we all can think of, I think, is Joseph, right? Who, when Potiphar's wife says, lie with me, not only does he say the right thing, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Not only does he say the right thing, but he doesn't stick around to wait for the rest of the persuasions. Oh, listen, Mr. Potiphar's gone. He won't be back to the end of the month. He took a lot of money. I know where he can get away with this. We'll send the servants out of the house. Nobody will see, nobody will know, nobody will talk. He doesn't stick around and listen to the rest of the persuasions. You know the rest of the story. What does he do? He runs so fast and so hard, he runs out of his clothes, ironically. We have been made by God to find the other sex attractive. It's a powerful, natural desire. The fool strategy is that, you know, when I find myself those moments, I'll just say no. You need to listen to me, especially young people. You need to listen to me. You need to be very clear about this morning. You need to listen to me. It is better, it is wiser, and it is righteous to avoid the place where you need to say no in the first place than to get yourself into the place where you might risk saying yes. It is far better and far wiser to stay away from the place where you might have to say no in the first place than to be in the place where you might possibly fall and say yes. There's something about young people and young fools in particular who like to live at the lines, who want to live at the edge. I'm not technically wrong yet, so you can't tell me I can't. Don't want to bind where God hasn't bound. That's right, I'm not going to draw lines God hasn't drawn, but I'm still going to tell you you're a fool for living at the edge because the Bible says that too. Don't push the limits. Don't live at the lines. Don't go down that street. Don't stick around and listen when she finds you because she's out looking for you. When she does find you, when she comes to your street, you don't stick around. You listen. You flee immorality. That's number two. Number three, thirdly and finally this morning, number three is the paradox. It happens suddenly. At the end of a process. It's only suddenly because of the shock for the person who falls this way. But in my experience, in my observation, and what I read, there's no suddenly about it when it happens. The actual stepping over the line is lightning fast when it finally happens, when the fall finally comes. And that's just part of why we're surprised when it happens to us, is because we never saw it coming, because we were too busy listening to the persuasions and wrestling with our own heart, searing our own conscience, justifying, rationalizing what we really want to do, letting those desires become more twisted and disordered in our heart, the temptations getting stronger. And we'll usually have not a clue of the high cost of what we've done. When it finally happens, the regret sets in. And young people, let me tell you what will happen. If you don't listen, if you play the fool, and suddenly you're there. You'll sit there and you'll have immense regrets. You'll feel the power of shame you've never known. And you'll ask yourself, how did I get here? And the temptation at the moment will be to say suddenly, to say it just happened, but it didn't just happen. You were where you shouldn't have been. You were listening to what you shouldn't have been doing. You were ignoring your conscience. The first opportunity, you probably said no, but you didn't leave. But one thing is, I know is true, is that it didn't just happen. You got there because you went there. You got there because you didn't listen to the warnings. Whether it's arrogance or obliviousness, you walk right into the trap. I think life's pretty simple, and I'll tell you, in the age we live in, all you got to do is look at marketing and mass media to understand that the world really does understand how temptation, how persuasion works. If you don't want coffee, don't go into a Starbucks, because you know what happens if you go into a Starbucks? You're going to probably walk out with coffee. Oh, I'm just there to meet a friend. The friend gets coffee. Well, what happens eventually? You sit there talking for 30, 40 minutes, and next thing you know, you've got a coffee. If you're trying to avoid immorality, then listen. Most self-aware people, single or married, young or older, most self-aware people know that you don't need to be in certain offices, that you don't go to certain rooms, that you don't go to certain apartments, that you don't go to certain houses where it's easy to do what you know you really shouldn't do, that maybe deep down you even don't really want to do. Above all, you know you shouldn't do. Well, then just stay away. Stay off those Facebook pages, married people. Stay off those Facebook pages of old friends, old dates, old boyfriends and girlfriends. You know the temptation. You wonder what if. You wonder how they've turned out. You wonder what kind of family they've got. It's a curiosity that at best leads to covetousness, and at worst leads to sending a message. And the message becomes a conversation. And the conversation kind of turns into, where do you live, if they actually understand privacy and haven't posted that on Facebook yet. And one thing leads to another. And even if your bodies never meet, your emotions have connected in the way that is your spouse's right alone. Don't go to the web page you shouldn't be at, the place you shouldn't be, the office you shouldn't be, the party you shouldn't be at. If you're married here, you know as well as I do that most affairs between people who are married don't come about between strangers. They come about between people who already knew each other, coworkers, friends, neighbors, somebody you meet through your kid's little league. Married people usually don't do random hookups. That's a singles issue. Married people, it's somebody we know already. It's somebody who we know we probably should be more circumspect about how we relate to them and how we have relationship with them, because sometimes maybe it's them becoming a little too friendly and familiar with us, and we know the discomfort, we know that feeling. We know it's the warning bells start to go off. We need to change what's going on about how we meet, where we meet, how often we meet, or maybe even we need to find a way to stay away from that person. Because they're becoming the seductress. Male or female, doesn't matter. The principle is the same. They're becoming the seductress. If you have a good friend, single or married, if you have a good friend of the opposite sex, you need to be careful. Because the emotional enjoyment of that relationship can easily become the physical enjoyment as well. As the wise man put it back just a couple of pages in the book of Proverbs, chapter 4 and verse 23, watch over your heart with all diligence, because from it flow the issues, the springs of life. When you lose your heart, you lose your mind. When you lose your mind, you lose your life. One of the great things about the Bible, one of the great purposes of what we have here, one of the great things about a book like Proverbs is this, that we can learn the lessons of the fool so that we don't have to learn the lessons for ourselves. Listen, we need to recognize, all of us, that good people, people who are trying to do what's right, still make serious sexual mistakes. In this day and age, in this congregation, in our families, wherever, virtually all of us, I am sure, know someone, an otherwise devout Christian, who's genuinely trying to do the right thing, but who has messed up in this regard. It's powerful. It's dangerous. In the past several years, and I don't want to be too stereotypical over what age group typically struggles with this, but I, over the past few years, have known too many young people and young adults within my sphere of knowledge or my relationship. Too many young people and young adults, listen to me, who have become sexually active, who have gotten pregnant or fathered a child, who have otherwise had to confess to unbiblical, ungodly immorality, sexual activity. And it seems to me as though, and let me be just again very general here with a very broad brush, which is always a little bit dangerous, but it seems to me that more and more Christian young people, and I don't know, let's just call it the 30 and unders, it's becoming harder and harder because of the world's persuasive messaging, because of the power of the world's relationships. It's becoming easier and easier for young people simply not to take what God says about this seriously anymore. Flee immorality. And let us remember this as well as we bring this to a close this morning. Because we sometimes begin to think that sexual immorality is only what others do. It's only what the wicked do. It's only what the worldly do. It's only what the weak Christian does. It can't happen to me. Many of us are quite honestly uncomfortable facing the fact that this may be something that more people among us are struggling with than we want to realize. But as the world goes mad around us, and as the world, if you watch the headlines, and not just the world in general, but even our country, is beginning more and more to reap the fruits, the consequences of the culture it has asked and demanded for. that we as the people of God need to work all the harder to maintain our holiness, our separateness, not just from what they do, but from how they talk and thus how they think. That we are not persuaded to adopt the world's outlook or the world's rationalizations. The world, our culture, our country, has changed what it at least publicly says about this, but God has never changed what he says about this. From the beginning, Jesus told the Jews of his day, from the beginning, it was not so. From the beginning, it was God made them in his image, male and female. The man leaves his parents, cleaves to his wife, and the two become one flesh. That's what it was from the beginning. God has not changed. We have, but God does not. May God help us. And young people, may God help you to listen to him and to listen to those of us who are older, wiser, more experienced, and who love you and care desperately about you. That we tell you the truth about this with great passion and with great sincerity. That you stay holy from the world in this regard. If you're here this morning, you need to get your life right with God, whatever it is. Maybe you've fallen sexually. Maybe you're part of the world's misguided quest for sexual satisfaction. Maybe that's your problem this morning. Maybe it's something else. Maybe you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. We want to help you with that this morning. We want to see you made right with God. If you're here this morning, and the first step you need to take is just confessing Jesus as Lord, Savior, Son of God, repenting of your sins and being baptized for the forgiveness of those sins, we'll help you with that. We want to help you with that. We hope you'll let us help you with that. If you're this morning, you're a child of God already, but you've fallen. You've lost your holiness, your separateness from the world. Pray to God to forgive however you've failed and fallen before him. If we can help you in some way, we can encourage you. If you know that some of the saints here know about who you are and what you've been doing, and you just need to make it right with everybody this morning, we'd like to not look down our noses at you, but hold your hand, hug your shoulders, pray with you as you get your life right with your Father again, as you go back to being the holy person he's called you to be. If we can help you in some way, why don't you come talk to us right now while we stand, while we sit.